one not think that it is about time one began to understand the necessity of getting to know mental or spiritual life, getting to know the mental structure of living beings, learning to realize how one should think, how one should use one's will, or learning to understand what the relationship between ourselves and other living beings means? Must this fear of death become more drastic or glaring? Have we not seen how the first conspicuous countries dictated by scalp and head hunters have fared? Must the otherwise so sensible and democratically advanced countries now go the same way, allow themselves to be encapsulated in a ring of secret police, censorship and deprivation of liberty, concentration camps, gas chambers and slavery for the benefit of an insane or sadistic scalp and head-hunting mentality? Indeed, do not these countries already sigh and groan under the first preparatory work of the dictatorship, the first offensive whiffs of its strangling of freedom? What are restrictions, control of currency and goods, tariff barriers, passports, visas and so on? They are the causes which, under the mask of necessity and innocence, now everywhere force dictatorship to the fore in the popular consciousness, quite regardless of the type of government in power. They are the same restrictions that promote the superstition that the democratic form of government has gone bankrupt and that dictatorship alone is to be preferred. One thus thinks that only a strong man can remedy misery, put the nation back on its feet and give personal freedom and well-being to everyone. One then pays homage to the strong man. And then begins not the liberation of people but an enormous hunt for scalps and heads, a hunt for everyone who dares to have an opinion or thought other than that of the dictator. That the road now invariably leads to concentration camps, torture, slavery, invalidity, death and downfall for the state, for the people and for the dictator is only what has already become a fact for the world through all the totalitarian states that are today mere heaps of ruins and mental chaos. Is it not also a fact that those states that are furthest advanced in the totalitarian system have even greater and more profound areas of deprivation of personal liberty than those countries or states that are still to a certain degree led by sound and incorrupt democratic principles, even if these principles are admittedly slipping or crumbling? This in turn means that no national system of government whatsoever capable of saving the world really exists. The salvation of the world is not a question of an increase in national power. It is not a problem of goods or money, but a psychic problem. Chapter 17, All the States of the World United in One Government is the Salvation of the World. So a completely new system is needed. This new system is the kernel in the consciousness of the greatest people of wisdom and was the original goal of the Christian world religion, namely mankind's emergence as one flock and one shepherd. This in turn means that all the human beings of the world, peoples and races, independent of nationality, must be united in one state under one government. Without this attitude on the part of the people of all nations and states, it will not be possible to create world peace. The time has come when people's materialistic knowledge and capability, their ability to industrialize and their means of transport, indeed their entire control of matter, which is now of international dimensions, can no longer survive within the individual nation or state. It can only live and breathe through internationalism. Nationalism will thus be an absolutely unfailing death by suffocation for the international dimension of the knowledge and capability of any people whatsoever. But as the national states each nevertheless set up enormous, obstructive frontier installations, military and naval bases, all destructive war forces around their domains, evolution must inevitably lead to the disruption of national states isolated in such nationalistic fossilizations. It is this disruption of the national states that specifically began in the form of the World War of 1914. And this disruption will not cease until isolated national states no longer exist. So the World War of 1914 has not ceased, it still exists and will continue its drastic, gory doomsday expedition over the earth until a true world government, based on an entirely democratic power principle, has been formed. That there would not exist within this world government, or this international legal and judicial system that it constitutes, the right of veto, or the possibility for any national state whatsoever to withdraw, is a matter of course. This naturally does not mean that the particular national characteristics and traditions of the peoples, as long as they do not harm and are not a hindrance to the well-being of other states, will be wiped out. On the contrary, world government is absolutely the only form under which these characteristics and traditions, as well as the personal freedom and well-being of the individual citizens, can be protected and preserved. The present world anarchy between the states is mankind's true mortal enemy and thus receives its full nourishment and prosperity through the nationalism or idolization of the native country and the ensuing warlike policy of isolation that all national states of today regard as a vital ideal. That they thereby destroy or annihilate their citizenship of the international world kingdom in which they are citizens, by virtue of the growth of their material knowledge and capability beyond national barriers and their international dimensions developed from this, still lies beyond the horizon of the great majority who do not understand that nationalism is collective egoism, while internationalism is collective unselfishness. Internationalism constitutes the true Christian principle. And only through this collective, unselfish principle in the form of a world government, or an international democratic legal and judicial system, will all the generations of the earth be blessed. Chapter 18, Spiritual Science and Peace. Internationalism is thus mankind's sole way to liberation from darkness, to culture, to freedom, to peace and happiness. And since spiritual science is exclusively the science of peoples, internationalism, their mutual cosmic brotherhood, a description of the future state or the structure of the world kingdom, in brief, is information about everything that has to do with the fate of a living being that neither materialistic science nor ecclesiastical religion has been able to give people. It is evident that mankind's true future happiness can be based only on spiritual science. This in turn means a science that reveals the mystery of life and its laws, not as dogmas to be believed in but, on the contrary, as coherent logical chains of thought that make all brotherhood between nations, races and individuals evident to the intelligence as a vital matter of course. Man's appropriation of this insight into the cosmic analysis of life or the living being is the only thing capable of perfecting the culture or the love that makes the human being appear in God's image after his likeness. And with a worldwide body of society of beings or cells, the Christmas Gospel's promise is fulfilled. Lasting peace shines out over the continents and seas of the earth. Primitiveness and Superstition. Chapter 1, How Primitiveness and Superstition Bring Cultures to the Decline or Armageddon that is foretold in the Bible. For the modern thinking person it can be useful to stand back from the common perceptions or public opinion, customs and so on of daily life in order to take a closer look at these phenomena, which include everything that has become modern in daily life in respect of nutrition, morality, religion, good form or commonly accepted manners, human behavior and the perception of the meaning of life itself. If we stop a little and look back at our perception of these phenomena, it cannot be denied that this appears to have undergone a very long series of changes. These changes can be divided into epochs that have each represented their own particular form of contemporary public opinion or popular view of life and human behavior. None of our previous views of life and behavior have lasted, even if they have been very fashionable, indeed have been fixed by law so that it became regarded as criminal not to submit to them. Thousands upon thousands of people have been tortured and murdered, killed by a statutory death penalty for the breach of these authoritarian resolutions. These same obligatory resolutions have later been revealed as manifestations of pure primitiveness or culminating superstition that, for people of today, verges on the ridiculous. The history of the world shows a profusion of massacres of people who began to see through the glaring imperfection and naivety of authoritarian traditions and perceptions. Such people could therefore not accept these as the moral foundation or basis for their view of life and behavior, and for this reason they became stamped as heretics or criminals and were sentenced to torture and execution. What does one think about, for example, the Inquisition or the witch trials in the Middle Ages? were not many people burned at the stake merely because they could not submit to the prescribed religious resolutions of the ecclesiastical or religious authorities? The methods these authorities used to get those arrested to plead guilty of the charges brought against them were so diabolically refined and painful that the accused could be made to confess to anything whatsoever, and therefore also, of course, to the charges they were accused of, even if they were totally innocent. Who can withstand the maiming of his organism, a culmination of the most refined sadistic torment? Would one not have to be almost a Christ or an initiated being in order to have sufficient strength of mind not to yield to the pressure of torture and make the confession dictated by the authorities which they, with all the instruments of torture at their disposal, were determined to have? It was apparently not the truth about the guilt or lack of guilt of the person arrested, but on the contrary exclusively the forcing of a dictated confession that was wanted, quite regardless of whether this was true or false. It seems as if the essential thing was to provide living fuel for the witch-burning fires. But with this the entire proceedings of the Inquisition acquire a tinge of sadism. However, the proceedings of the Inquisition were not concerned only with the ostensible fight against magic, witchcraft and sorcery. It stretched its fatal arm out to people with alien mental attitudes. Great thinkers and researchers who presented new points of view and discoveries about the universe or the world of the stars were thrown into the flames of the witch-burning fires of the Inquisition. The world picture had already been monopolized by ideas bound by traditions and protected by the death penalty, ideas that today are regarded as the culmination of primitiveness and superstition. How could an evolution of spirit and culture really take place when there were torture and the death penalty for every minute new deviation from the prescribed traditional thinking and perception of life? Because of its naive or primitive nature, the modern human mentality and authority had to be suicidal. This authoritarian damning of the springs of life or new knowledge and facts had ultimately to give rise to enormous revolutionary powers that could burst the mental dams. Are revolutions and wars not to a great extent the breaking of these constricting and obstructing shackles for all evolution? Mankind came to adopt new traditions that also had their obstructions, restraints and decline, because these new traditions and kinds of attitude to the Godhead, morality and behavior were also to a great extent based on primitiveness and superstition. And in this way one world culture after another fell into decline because of the still prevailing primitiveness and superstition in each culture. Where ignorance, naivety or primitiveness involving torture and the death penalty dictates to people false ideas that in turn give rise to life and culture destroying traditions, deadly morality and behavior, a perfect culture cannot possibly be created. It must lead invariably not to a culture but to a cultural breakdown, an Armageddon, mental chaos, depression and suicide. It is the fulfillment of God's words to Eve, "I will greatly increase your pains in childbearing, with pain you will give birth to children. Your desire will be for your husband and he will rule over you." It is the fulfillment of God's words to Adam, "Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil you will eat of it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you. By the sweat of your brow you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken, for dust you are and to dust you will return." It is the fulfillment of God's words to Cain, "What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Now you are under a curse and driven from the ground that opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the ground, it will no longer yield its crops for you. You will become a restless wanderer on the earth." It is the fulfillment of the parable of the prodigal son who came to eat together with the swine. And it is the fulfillment of Jesus' words about the life of the goats at his left side on the day of judgment. Chapter 2. Why one cannot justifiably assert that the present culture is free of primitiveness and superstition. But now in our modern and well-informed time people cannot succumb to any degree of primitiveness or superstition, can they? We have great universities, colleges and schools, and children from a very early age have compulsory schooling. Even at a relatively tender age they begin having to read and study. And most even younger normally gifted children today know more about life and existence than the most learned scientists knew about the same things centuries ago. And we see the splendid results of this plethora of learning. Mankind has thousands of scientists, doctors, engineers, architects, designers and other specialists at its disposal for the creation of its culture, daily life and well-being. People have been able to practice veritable physical wonders. They control millions upon millions of nature's horsepower. We can build huge engines and let these work for people, let these pour forth millions of useful objects. We can let the powers of nature carry us over the clouds and under the water and over the motorways of the continents. People can sit at home in their own living rooms and talk to friends or acquaintances on the other side of the planet. They can likewise in the same living rooms hear concerts, music, song and speech from all the great stages and broadcasting houses of the world. A human voice can thus be heard all over the earth. Distance and thereby time and space are reduced to constituting merely a fraction of what they previously meant to people. Things that previously took months to achieve can now be carried out in a corresponding number of hours or minutes. The same therefore also holds true for the gathering of experience. Evolution is progressing by leaps and bounds. Among an informed mankind possessing knowledge and ability of such genius, one cannot assert that there can be talk of primitiveness or superstition, can one? One has long since perceived the primitiveness and superstition in the cultures of the past. In our time, one surely cannot fall for any kind of those naive ideas that can take root in general superstition. In our time, which trials cannot take place. We make a point of being splendidly defended by ingenious lethal weapons. Indeed, with one single bomb we can today wipe out a city of over a million inhabitants with its population and culture, so that we will undoubtedly gradually force the overly aggressive and offensive nations into silence. We also have a splendidly judicial system with jails and prisons, so we will undoubtedly get the better of the gangsters and criminals and hold these in check. With our splendid staffs of doctors, our hospitals and medical science, institutes for research and vivisection, we are sure to overcome illness of every sort. With our splendid trained experts and potential for production, we will undoubtedly gradually outcompete other people and businesses and give work to our unemployed. With our social security and disabled and old age pensions, we have created a splendid existence for the sick and the old. With our extensive schooling, we will undoubtedly see to it that our people are maintained at a high level of culture. No, one certainly cannot justifiably assert that in our culture, based as it is on such highly developed science, there can exist any areas of primitiveness and superstition worth mentioning. We live absolutely on the basis of facts. What use do we have for religion and the Godhead, Gospels and prayer? Such phenomena belong to the nursery and to the imaginations of dreamers. But is this self-assured view of one's own morality and behavior, which to a greater or lesser extent appears as an ideal within the modern and leading civilized states, also based on true facts? If it is not, it can be based only on belief, that is on suppositions. And if these suppositions do not match reality, this ideal of the civilized states is in reality only primitiveness and superstition. Does that mean that there exists a possibility that the people of the future will look back on our present culture and in it find great areas of primitiveness and superstition, indeed find many of our present so highly praised practices quite ridiculous and naive, in the same way as people of today find the culture of the Middle Ages full of ridiculous and tragicomical practices that were at the time praised to the skies as absolutely right and perfect? Yes. It is very possible indeed. As long as one within a given area, be it within the field of morality and behavior, within family life as well as within the forms of governments or states, within medical science or within other sciences, can still reap experiences that can reveal faults in the prevailing view within these fields, and as long as one through the same experiences can improve the view, then this view has not reached its perfect or finished state. And then one will have to acknowledge, with every new improvement one is able to make, that the previous attitude to and knowledge about the given field were not perfect. but a knowledge that is not perfect is to a corresponding degree an expression of imperfection or primitiveness. Now, one cannot claim that the civilized resolutions, laws, social conditions and customs in force today are so perfect that in the fields concerned one cannot reap experiences showing that they contain shortcomings and faults that can be improved through these new experiences. One cannot either justifiably assert that the present cultural epoch is perfect and so free of primitiveness and superstition. Chapter 3, The Perfect Human Being in God's Image and His Perfect World Culture or Kingdom on Earth. Now, some will perhaps object and point out that according to this one could never be finished, everything could go on being improved without end. But this is not true. Every perfect creation is a completed unit. It has the sole purpose of bringing the object of creation to its finished stage so that it fulfills the purpose for which the creation was started. When this purpose has been fulfilled, the creation is superfluous in the field concerned. This holds true just as much in the creative field of nature as in the creative field of the human being. Trees do not grow up into heaven, and the apple does not develop beyond its fully ripe stage. In the human being's creative undertakings, the completed stage is also the goal or ultimate result. If it were not so, nothing whatsoever, such as houses, cars, clothes, shoes, would be finished and benefit people. As regards the creation of the mentality of the living being, this creation is not infinite either but is intended solely to fulfill a purpose. This purpose has been expressed in the divine words, "Let us create a human being in our image after our likeness." The mentality and conduct of the living being will thus be developed to be totally perfect. When this goal has been reached, there is nothing more to be reached in this field. What is more perfect than total perfection? And what is total perfection as regards the living being? It is in thought, mind and conduct to be so that one does not exist in any situation whatsoever without being a real joy and blessing to all living beings and, like the sun, shining on and giving warmth to the unjust as well as the just. Then one loves one's neighbor as oneself and illustrates that behavior which is the fulfillment of all the laws. Greater than this love and its ensuing behavior cannot be. To the same extent as people reach this perfection, they will experience the peace and goodwill of the Christmas gospel in their daily physical lives. Then the kingdom of heaven is not only something within the being, it also sparkles and shines outside the being and unites all hearts and brains in love's immeasurable flood of rays, and God again wanders with Adam in the Garden of Eden. Here we have reached the fulfillment of God's promise about the future of man. The seed of the woman has crushed the head of the serpent. Human behavior has crushed the animal behavior in the human being. Cain has discarded his evil being. He no longer does evil. Sin is no longer lying at the door. He can now lift his head freely. The human being is no longer a murderer and is therefore not held to the earth by pangs of conscience and unhappy fates, and God's words to Abraham have here been fulfilled. In Abraham all the generations of the earth have been blessed. The Christ child in terrestrial man's mentality has grown up. The human being in God's image rules the terrain of the earth, its continents and seas. The flood of rays of God's countenance sparkles in all ventures, in all eyes, gives warmth in every handshake. Everything is a caress. The prodigal son has returned to his father. In truth, God's creation is completed. The human being has become one with God. Over the tracks of the fields of war, the death scenery of the battlefields, the weeping and gnashing of teeth, the cries and pains of the past, a new world sparkles. Wisdom and love have united all the people and states of the world into one people and one state, into one flock and one shepherd. We are in the domain of peace. The kingdom of God has become an all-conquering life force in flesh and blood, in manifestation and creation, in culture and conduct. Chapter 4, The Present Modern Culture's Unfinished Sides. Number 1, The Human Being's Deadly Relationship with Animals. With this divine panorama over God's completed human being and his world culture as a backdrop, it is not difficult to see how incomplete the present modern human being and his so highly praised culture really are. And it is precisely with this panorama as daily life and behavior that the human beings of the future will judge the human being of today and his behavior, not as an expression of real culture but as unfinished and barbaric behavior, indeed, something simply appalling. But since the human beings of the future we are talking about here will be initiated beings who therefore know why the people of today are as they are, they will be understanding and gentle judges. In a world in which one for millenniums has never expressed an intolerant or hostile or killing intention towards one's neighbor and does not know illness or any other form whatsoever of unhappy fates, because one has long since acquired a way of behaving that makes a being immune to these phenomena, one will with some wonder read about present-day man's barbaric cultural epoch, which for the reader will be the long-lost past. And for those studying this past there will be enough to be horrified about. One will be particularly astonished by the huge area of mentality that people of today had in common with the animals. They murdered and flayed these beings in order to eat them just like beasts of prey. In one's own nature one had long since outdone these latter beings' capacity to murder with invented, artificial murder weapons such as rifles, pistols and butcher's knives. Indeed, one had entire murder factories, slaughterhouses, where one on a conveyor belt, so to speak, could kill, flay and dismember a certain number of animals per hour. But this was not enough. One even reared the animals and multiplied their reproduction in order to get enough food to satisfy the still dominant hunger for meat and the ensuing animal tendencies in the would-be human being. But one was not satisfied with robbing the animals of their free life in nature by hunting and killing them merely to satisfy one's hunger for meat. No, one also reared certain animals and multiplied their reproduction exclusively in order to get leather and furs. One reared these unhappy animals in small, confined spaces in which they sat imprisoned until they reached a certain age. They were then flayed and their skins sold for further processing into modern coats and furs. Imagine this entire murder system set in motion by beings who were so superior to the animal's existence that this degrading system was not a life condition at all, neither as regards nutrition nor clothing. The would-be human being in God's image here maintained for the animals an absolute hell quite unnecessary for the maintenance of his own existence. The human being did not even need to live on meat, it was actually downright harmful food for this refined being. But these people could not be blamed for being as they were. They lived in the very strongly fossilized superstition that it was necessary to eat meat or animal food in order to live. It was therefore in good faith that the feasts they held included orgies of the devouring of other living beings' organisms. One can see from the cultural stage of the real or completed human beings a primitiveness and superstition in the advanced, modern civilized human being of today that are not to any extent whatsoever less than those that the human being of today looks back to in people of the Stone Age or other primitive peoples of the past. Chapter 5, The Present Modern Culture's Unfinished Sides. Number 2, Man's Fatal Hunger for Poison. Furthermore, one also, from the perfect world of the finished or completed human being, looks back with astonishment at the present terrestrial human beings more or less uninhibited inhaling of poisonous, and thereby pathogenic, tobacco smoke. He in good faith undermines and destroys his lungs, those noble organs of life designed only for the inhaling of fresh air, which is an absolutely vital necessity for the being in question. In the same way, an extraordinarily large number of unfinished human beings swallow other and even more dangerous poisonous substances, alcohol and drugs in many different forms. The completed human being of the future will read with horror about the modern human being's strange customs as regards these poisonous substances. He seals every joy, every feast, every agreement with a glass, that is, a great amount of suicide or mental confusion, just as every depression is also sealed with the swallowing of a greater or smaller amount of similar mind-confusing or deadly poisonous substances. This continuous eating, drinking and inhaling of poisonous substances or the pouring of these into the main vital organs of the organism, which are designed solely for the promotion of the digestion of natural food and for the promotion of natural breathing, Without the maintenance of the health of which the being could not possibly live and enjoy natural well-being on the physical plane, also reveal to the human being of the future a great area of primitiveness and superstition in the present civilized human being. He who controls millions of nature's horsepower and compels them to work for him does not seem to be able to control a microscopic fraction of these powers when it is a matter of conquering life-destroying desires in his own psyche. He allows his organism, and thereby his capacity to experience life, to be hopelessly broken down and destroyed.